Matthew Stafford is a Ram. Jared Goff is a Lion. Yep. Matthew Stafford heading to L.A. in exchange for Jared Goff and multiple draft picks, sources told Adam Schefter.
The Rams had been working on this for a few days now, and the Detroit Lions really wanted to get this done and resolved, but it quickly became apparent that the Los Angeles Rams wanted Matthew Stafford as badly as Matthew Stafford wanted them.
That's Adam Schefter shaking up the football world on Saturday night. Matthew Stafford is off to the Rams, who might now be contenders for Super Bowl 56, while Jared Goff and the rebuilding Lions might be biting off more than they can chew. Today, we dive inside the first blockbuster NFL trade of 2021, and we explain why it's not exactly what it seems. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, February 1st. This is ESPN Daily. Bill Barnwell, I am sorry. First off, we told you on Friday explicitly you'd have this rare Sunday off from your job making us smarter about football. But just when you think you're out, ESPN Daily always pulls you back in.
Pablo, I was ready to record at 1 a.m. to talk about the Madden Pro Bowl. So this is slightly more newsworthy. So I'm happy at least we have more something more compelling perhaps to talk about here with the Matthew Stafford trade.
Bill Barnwell is a senior writer for ESPN and the host of the Bill Barnwell Show podcast. Compelling, but also kind of the closest thing football gets to a video game transaction.
Yes.
We have two starting quarterbacks getting swapped. We have Matt Stafford going to the Rams, Jared Goff plus two future first rounders and a third rounder this year headed to the Lions. So when you got the Adam Schefter klaxon sound on your phone Saturday night, your first reaction was what?
Well, my first reaction, I would say, is that the Rams really hate draft picks and want to get rid of them as quickly and efficiently as possible. And then my second thought was that the Rams really were done with Jared Goff and wanted to move on from him and weren't going to let anybody beat them to the punch with an offer. We knew that a deal was coming this week because there were reports on Saturday that the Lions were expecting to get a deal done by Tuesday, which is essentially, when it comes to the NFL, their way of saying, hey, get your best offers in because we're going to make this deal sooner rather than later. We knew the Rams were questioning their commitment to Goff. We talked about it over the past couple of weeks on ESPN Daily. Even though his four-year, $134 million extension has not started yet. And then on top of all that, Brad Holmes, the new general manager with the Lions, just left the Rams after, I believe, 8 years as their director of college scouting under Les Snead, who was the other GM who made this trade. So put all that together, and the Rams made the most sense as a possible destination for Stafford. But the fact that the deal was announced late on a Saturday night probably tells you that the Rams were not especially proud of how all this went down. The fact that they have just given up on the quarterback they have been propping up and defending publicly for years while giving up two extra first rounders just to upgrade under center.
And there has been some sticker shock, Bill, at the sheer tonnage of compensation there, those draft picks that the Lions got back for a 32-year-old Matt Stafford. So did the Rams pay that high a price to just get Goff's enormous contract off the books, or is that just how much they actually value Stafford?
Yeah, I would say it's both. You know, let me start with the Goff side of things here, I guess. So the Rams have paid the $25 million signing bonus on that four-year deal, but he still has significant salary guarantees left over the next couple of years. So realistically, the Rams were basically locked in to paying Goff $53.3 million over the next two seasons for a quarterback they no longer wanted. They didn't want to do it. And because Goff is making that much money and locked into that much money, I suspect he didn't have much trade value around the league at that rate. He was not a significant part of the compensation going to Detroit. But on the Stafford side of things, when it came to getting the draft picks they needed to get Matthew Stafford to Los Angeles, the Rams were stuck. And that's because of their organizational philosophy and their disdain for first-round picks. After trading for Jalen Ramsey, Los Angeles did not have a first-round pick in 2021. It left them at a competitive disadvantage in a league where teams often discount the value of those future picks. To win the Stafford sweepstakes, the Rams had to get ahead of teams like the Broncos and Niners, who both have 2021 first-round picks to offer the Lions. So the Rams were going to need to go over the top with compensation to get the Lions to accept a deal that didn't have a first-round pick this year. So I have to admit, I don't think anybody else was going to offer two first-rounders, a third-rounder, and a starting quarterback to get Stafford. But the Rams had to blow away the competition, and they did.
So pretty much all year on this podcast, Bill, you have been ahead of this. You've been keenly observing how Jared Goff has been falling out of favor with the Rams and with head coach Sean McVay. And McVay, like, his whole rep is the quarterbacks guy. That's his thing. That's his genius. So what does Stafford enable the Rams to do on offense now? How good a fit is he?
I think he moves the ceiling for the Rams on offense. Because after 4 years with Jared Goff working under Sean McVay, it felt pretty clear how the Rams felt about that fit. Goff was a guy who could work off of play action and deliver accurate passes. He is a very accurate thrower when he has time to throw.
Goff, take the handoff, tosses to a wide open Robert Woods. Goff on target for a first down to the 35.
But he wasn't going to create plays out of structure when he didn't get the easy looks he was expecting off of play action. And he's been a mess under pressure. Goff ranks 24th out of 29 quarterbacks over the last 4 years in QBR when he's pressured. The hope is that Stafford fixes those problems. He's needed to create for himself in times in Detroit. His offensive line hasn't always been all that good. He's 19th under pressure over that time frame, which, to be fair, is not exactly superstar stuff. But I think McVay thinks Stafford won't have to fend for himself quite as frequently as he did with the Lions or over the last decade. Stafford has a stronger arm. I think everyone agrees on that. Maybe this unlocks some vertical components to that Rams offense. But I think in the big picture, McVay has seen the scheme play action heavy, outside zone heavy offense. He's seen that offense elevate middling quarterbacks like Goff and Jimmy Garoppolo to Super Bowl candidates. He's seen it take good passers like Matt Ryan in Atlanta and Aaron Rodgers this past year in Green Bay into MVP winners. I think McVay thinks Stafford has that Ryan and Rodgers level upside in Los Angeles. But to be fair, they kind of thought the same thing about Jared Goff.
Our colleague Dan Orlovsky, Bill, he loves that yes. upside. I saw on Twitter, he loves it so much that he's already declared that McVay plus Matt Stafford equals 2021 Super Bowl favorites, almost as if he's carved it into a tree inside a heart. So how hot is that particular take, do you think?
Oof. I mean, Dan's a pretty smart guy, and Dan
yes,
is someone
is.
Who Dan's played under Sean McVay.
Yes.
So he knows this offense much better than I do. But it does sound like he has seen a future where Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and a couple of other guys don't exist. I'll say this. I'll be honest. You know, in all seriousness, I don't think they're the favorites. I still think the Chiefs are the favorites until proven otherwise. But the Rams aren't making this move for anything short of Super Bowl contention. They have no first-round picks until 2024. They traded two firsts, two seconds, and two third-round picks to get Goff, signed him to a huge extension the first chance they got after his third season, and then dealt him again before that extension even began with two more first-round picks and a third-round pick to get Stafford. So to put all that together, that's four first-round picks, two second-round picks, and three third-round picks to get star-level quarterback play. So if you get that and you don't win a Super Bowl, you've messed up.
I mean, I just want to be clear and reiterate that math for a second, Bill, because it is staggering to hear you say that. Four firsts, two seconds, three thirds, plus a giant stadium that people may or may not be coming to next year.
That's true.
With Matthew Stafford as the final result. My God.
It's a lot for a guy who, you know, it's not like Matthew Stafford has been guaranteeing success. And here's the tough part for me when it comes to saying they're going to be the favorites to win the Super Bowl. We know they were a playoff team in 2020, and they were driven by their defense. The defense was number one in DVOA, the Football Outsiders Efficiency Stat. Phenomenal defense. But the problem is that the Rams are counting on everything that went right in 2020 to keep happening in 2021, while using basically everything they had left in the cupboard to fix what they saw as their big problem on offense, which was the quarterback position. That's a really dangerous way of thinking because things don't often work out that way. Let's say Stafford improves the offense, which I think he will. That's great. the Rams probably are not going to be the number one defense in football again in 2021. Even if everybody was coming back, it would just be by sheer variance. But on top of that, they're going to lose four starters to free agency. They lost Brandon Staley, their defensive coordinator, who was very impressive in his first and only season with the Rams, to the Chargers as their head coach. So even if the offense does take a step forward, it's extremely likely the defense is going to take a step backwards next year. So mix a lot together, I kind of see them as sort of the same team they were in 2020 in that 10-6 range.
So if that's the case, Bill, how long do you think Stafford is the answer in LA? How long before the Rams try to go get a rookie quarterback?
Well, I have to imagine they're going to keep him around for a while, because you don't trade two first-round picks and you're starting quarterback for a rental. Stafford has 2 years and $43 million left in his current contract. It's pretty reasonable. There have been reports he doesn't want to redo that deal. That's because he's kind of the offensive version of Darrelle Revis, where he has the best timing on the planet when it comes to getting new extensions and getting the most money possible. The Rams are going to be negotiating an extension with Stafford, whether it's this offseason, whether it's next offseason before the final year of his deal. They're going to have to do it at some point. So the smarter thing is to get that deal done now as part of the trade, so Stafford doesn't have more leverage next year. Now, if the Rams actually do win a Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford, they might never use a first-round pick again. They might keep with this philosophy, because Les Snead, the Rams GM, does not like first-round picks. After using one of his two first-rounders on Aaron Donald in 2014 and Todd Gurley in 2015, both of whom paid pretty good during their rookie contracts, Los Angeles' philosophy has changed. They traded up to draft Goff in 2016 and then have not used a single first-round pick since. They've repeatedly traded their selections for talented young players who are already in the NFL towards the end of their rookie deals. It's clear by what they're doing that the Rams either think that established young players are undervalued, first-round picks are overvalued, or more likely some combination of the two.
So, Bill, we agree, I think, that the ceiling on this team feels like the Super Bowl. So where's the floor then?
Oh, boy. Well, I would characterize this as a high-risk, high-reward strategy. And the Rams are making these deals, like we said, expecting they can win a Super Bowl with Stafford. But we know that there's no guarantee the bottom doesn't fall out. Stafford, again, has not been a guarantee of anything in Detroit. And he's had injury problems the past couple of years. There's no guarantee he's going to be healthy moving behind a mediocre offensive line in Los Angeles. I think the Texans are maybe the most obvious example and the most recent example of how this can go south. They sent two first-rounders to the Dolphins for Laremy Tunsil, thinking that the Deshaun Watson guaranteed them 9-10 wins and that they'd be a playoff team or close to a playoff team every year. They expected those two first-rounders to be towards the end of the first round. Well, you saw what happened this year. After a 4-12 season, they just handed the Dolphins the third pick in the 2021 draft. It's not out of the question the Rams do the same thing when it comes to the Lions in 2023.
All right, Bill, coming up, I want to look at how this trade impacts the rebuilding Detroit Lions and what their ambitions are with Jared Goff under center.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So I want to move over to the Detroit Lions now, Bill, because on this podcast, we haven't even talked about the professed cannibalism of new head coach Dan Campbell in his introductory press conference.
And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing.
Bite a kneecap t-shirts, by the way, are now being sold to Lions fans on the internet, quite naturally. So what do you make of what's being built in Detroit?
Oh, I appreciate that they have a philosophy. I'll start there. But it just feels like there are certain teams who always seem to be rebuilding. And after 3 years of trying to rebuild the roster in the image of one Matt Patricia in Detroit, they're tearing things down even further. They're starting from the ground up. They are beginning to nibble on kneecaps in Detroit under Dan Campbell. And it's no accident. I mean, it makes sense that the Lions gave him a 6-year deal, because by making the Stafford trade, it's pretty clear they expect this rebuild to last 2 or 3 years before they even show signs of turning things around in the Motor City. The problem with all of that, though, is that they don't really have much else to work with. There's not much else teams really want on this roster besides Matthew Stafford. And their best young player is probably wide receiver Kenny Golladay, who is about to be an unrestricted free agent. Detroit's a year away from getting out of many of the bad signings from the Patricia era. They have to hope that they start nailing their draft picks from this point forward over the next couple of years. I would guess they're looking at 2024, which is the point you'd probably figure Aaron Rodgers is retired or somewhere else, as their target point for contention in the NFC North.
So it sounds like Jared Goff should be concerned in that case, not simply because he's made of human flesh, but because, Bill, if bite a kneecap is actually a new version of trust the process, like, is Goff just a placeholder as opposed to a solution? What does acquiring him do for Detroit?
I'm not sure. I really am a little confused here, because, I mean, Goff has said he's excited to go somewhere he's wanted, which I wouldn't be so sure. Detroit picked up Goff's contract most likely to get more draft capital as part of this trade. If it hadn't been Detroit, the Rams would have sent Goff somewhere else, probably attached a draft pick, and then used the cap savings to go out and get Stafford. They're years away from competing, and Goff is sort of weirdly good enough to keep them from actually tanking and getting a top three pick, but not good enough to push them towards the playoffs. On top of all that, they hired Anthony Lynn as their offensive coordinator, the former Chargers coach and Bills OC, who has worked with Tyrod Taylor, has worked with Justin Herbert, who's pretty mobile. Jared Goff is mostly immobile. I just don't see him being a great fit for an Anthony Lynn offense. So it wouldn't shock me if the Lions, even though they've said that they want Jared Goff to stay, might consider trading Jared Goff somewhere else in the coming weeks. They could eat some cash, convert some of his $25.3 million base salary into a signing bonus, and make Goff cheaper and more palatable to a team like the Colts or the Patriots. They might be telling themselves they're going to make it work with Goff, and they might try for a period of time, but my guess right now is that he's not their week one starter in 2022.
So do you think the Lions then try to draft a rookie quarterback as soon as possible then?
Well, they pick 7th, so they could hope for a quarterback to fall for them there. It's going to be tough, though, because realistically, we know the Jaguars are taking Trevor Lawrence at 1. The Jets could be taking a quarterback at 2. The Dolphins could be trading the 3rd pick to the Texans to draft a quarterback at 3. There might not be any quarterbacks on the board by the time the Lions pick at 7. So they could trade up. They could, of course, use some of the picks they got from the Stafford deal to move up from 7, but there's not going to be many options available. My guess is they take a year to tank, or quasi-tank, see what they have with Goff, and then use the 2021 college season to get a really deep evaluation process going, and then pick somebody with one of the top 3 picks in 2022.
So the biggest somebody right now, Bill, is Deshaun Watson. And we had discussed on Friday a few hypothetically enticing 3-team deals for him. What does this deal, this enormous blockbuster, do for the quarterback market and specifically the going rate for Deshaun Watson?
Oh, boy. Oh, this is not helpful when it comes to the Deshaun Watson trade. It's going to make it even tougher for a couple of reasons. Number one, the teams who were in the running for Stafford are going to be even more desperate now. With Aaron Rodgers not likely to be traded, Carson Wentz looking to stay with the Eagles, and Phillip Rivers retiring, we're looking at the Broncos, the Jets, the 49ers, the Dolphins, the Patriots, the Colts, the Panthers, and Washington, all on the market for a veteran quarterback, and Watson might be the only one left. And after seeing what the Rams were willing to give up for Stafford, who is not on Watson's level on pretty much any way. Watson's younger, he's more talented, he has been much more effective, his contract is better.
Yes.
I think we have to invoke the biggest trade in NFL history.
Ooh.
I think we have to invoke the Herschel Walker trade here.
Wow.
I mean, we're getting to that point now. Herschel Walker trade, for those of you who are blessedly younger than the Jimmy Johnson era in Dallas, Herschel Walker was traded for 3 first-round picks, 3 second-round picks, 3rd and 6th round picks, and 4 players for Walker and 2 third-round picks in the long run. We have not seen a trade for that level of draft compensation for any player in recent memory in the NFL. If anyone's going to do it, it's Deshaun Watson. And given what we saw for Stafford, I think Watson's probably in that ballpark in terms of draft capital.
Bill, I feel like you merely invoking Herschel Walker here should result in a Barnwell klaxon being sounded on the ESPN app. But I want to wrap here by noting that you were, as usual on this podcast, very much ahead of everybody on this entire transaction, the Goff and Stafford deal. You had been musing about the Rams trading Goff for a while, Bill. And in 2019, the Rams COO, Kevin Demoff, actually called you out on this subject during a panel at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference.
Look, I think Bill Barnwell's personal goal in life is to get Jared Goff traded.
So my question here to wrap, have you received an apology yet?
You know it's on when somebody's calling you out on stage at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference.
Absolutely.
He's lucky I wasn't there. Let me set the scene here, because I think there's something that applies to teams who aren't the Rams over the next couple of years. So in 2018, I argued that a team should consider a different sort of quarterback cycle. Typically, during those first 3 years, we see teams invest heavily in surrounding their rookie quarterback with talent. But once those quarterbacks get more expensive, those teams have to cut back elsewhere. And usually, that causes them to struggle. I argued, back in 2018, that a team should just cycle through rookie contract quarterback after rookie contract quarterback, keeping them, if they turn out to be a Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson level superstar, but otherwise trading their quarterbacks after 3 or 4 years for the draft picks they need to get the next talented young quarterback, all the while using the cost savings at quarterback to ensure they can keep surrounding their quarterback, whoever it is, with talent elsewhere on the roster. On top of that, if you have a brilliant offensive coach who can coach up a young quarterback who otherwise might be mediocre, I think this could work. Now, the Rams maybe saw themselves in the article. I'm not going to lie. Maybe fairly saw themselves in the article and took at least a little bit of offense. And to be fair to them, the day I published that article, Jared Goff threw 5 touchdowns and posted a perfect passer rating in a victory over the Minnesota Vikings.
Goff now empty as he takes the shotgun snap. Looking over the middle, he throws down the left seam. Caught by the fingertips. Whoa. Robert Woods breaks into the end zone. And Jared Goff has thrown his 5th touchdown pass.
On that day, I happened to look very stupid. Now, the Rams don't owe me an apology. They made a decision. Didn't work out. That happens. I get things wrong all the time as well. But the story of what happened here is very instructive for teams who are facing similar situations. Nobody batted an eye when the Rams extended Goff or when the Eagles gave Carson Wentz a new deal. But those two contracts have not turned out to be very good for their teams. The Jimmy Garoppolo deal for the Niners isn't looking very hot right about now. The problem is there's no mid-tier rate for quarterbacks. It's either paying full freight or paying a rookie deal. And if you have a guy you need to surround with great talent, and you pay him like he's someone you don't need to surround with great talent to play as a top-level quarterback, doesn't turn out well when, because of that money, you can't surround that guy with talent anymore. And unfortunately, a lot of teams are about to face that same conundrum over the next few months. The Ravens are going to re-sign Lamar Jackson to a massive deal. The Bills are going to re-sign Josh Allen to a massive deal. The Browns are probably going to re-sign Baker Mayfield to a massive deal. And those guys aren't taking discounts, and they shouldn't take discounts. Nobody is going to be critical of those signings when they happen. But what happened with Goff and Wentz shows the downside risk of giving those guys huge raises.
Bill Barnwell, thank you for your prophecies, and just know that you will always be our first round draft pick.
After Friday, I feel very confident you would trade me for Bill Walton in 2 seconds if he cared to talk about football.
We'd have to examine our cap sheet.
That's fair.
up next. Our tribute to the late, great Sekou Smith.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Here's another story I want you to know. Everybody loved Sekou Smith. That's the scouting report on the longtime NBA reporter and analyst who died last week at age 48. Another tragedy caused by COVID-19. That love is why we saw him mourned by so many major figures around the league, from Warriors head coach Steve Kerr to Pelicans head coach Stan Van Gundy to NBA commissioner Adam Silver, all of whom were reeling because Sekou left us so suddenly. Just a few weeks ago, he was right there, on TV, talking about LaMelo and Lonzo Ball playing against each other for the first time in the NBA.
It's one of those great moments, man, where you and your brother get to play each other on the court for the first time in the NBA. Shouts out to LaVar Ball. I know he's criticized a lot for what he says, but let's talk about who he is as a father, and that can't be denied. LaVar Ball, a great father.
And Sekou was also a father. He leaves behind a wife and three kids. And I was a fan of his, mostly from afar. I knew he was based in Atlanta, and I watched him on NBA TV, and occasionally I saw him at games. But we had so many mutual friends in NBA journalism, and so I wanted to talk to two of them, Om Young-Misuk and Mark Spears. Mark, what was your relationship like with Sekou?
Oh, I mean, we go back probably over 20 years. There was kind of like a unwritten rule amongst a lot of Black writers, especially like NBA writers, that if you went to somebody else's city, you would hang out. Gave each other an ear, gave each other support, gave each other a place to vent. He probably listened to me more than I had to listen to him. I'm really glad I got that time with him in the bubble. Like, I kind of feel guilty now because that could have been time he spent with his family, you know, now knowing. But just to get for over a month to hang out with him every day. Like you think about hanging with your coworkers every day, you're like, yo, I need a break. I'm going to go sit in my room, man.
I
need a break from now. Never got tired of hanging out with him. Hey, man, what time are you getting on the bus? What you getting for dinner? Yeah, I want some of that too. What time are you eating breakfast? What time are you riding your bike? Like, we always did stuff together.
What did he love the most about basketball and covering the sport?
He always had an opinion. Me and him didn't always agree, but he always had a strong opinion.
Let's be honest. With the number of games the Lakers have left and what we've seen from LeBron since he returned from that injury, do you really think he's got the gusto? Do you think he's got the energy to get them high enough in the standings to really put himself into that top three in the MVP race?
He had great relationships with the players. They trusted him. They felt like they could open up to him and, you know, he could hold secrets, but, you know, also tell their story well.
And Om also saw Sekou as pretty much everyone's favorite.
It's kind of like a best friend that you grew up with, like from basically middle school or high school. And you don't see him as much as you'd like to, but when you do, you just pick up right back where you were. He was the youngest, oldest, grumpy man ever. He was just had this old soul to him.
Welcome to another edition of the Hang Time Podcast. I'm your host, Sekou Smith, here in Atlanta. I'm upset today. I'm just going to go ahead and say it right off the bat. Our guest today has the kind of voice that makes me believe there is no Santa.
But also such a genuine and nice and kind person. My Facebook timeline is filled with Sekou right now because Sekou's been tagged on everything. And I saw this one post that really kind of struck me. He was in London for one of the, you know, the NBA games out there. And two guys took a picture with him and they posted and they said, we had been fans of Sekou and we, you know, read and listened to his podcast. He ran into these two guys. They took a picture with him and they said, Sekou was so nice. Sekou even like brought over a camera crew and interviewed them about like, you know, what it's like for fans in London to have the NBA. Years later, they were still staying in touch. In fact, one of the other guys in that picture, unfortunately, I guess, passed away because the guy who posted it again and posted this tribute to Sekou said, I can't believe that two of the people in this picture are no longer with us. But that, to me, is like the essence of Sekou.
Both Mark and Ohms say Sekou Smith built a lasting legacy in their own lives and many others.
I'm just going to just truly miss his friendship and his humor. And I learned a lot about what being a great husband is. I don't have children, but I learned a lot about from him about being a great father. A part of my heart was certainly, you know, left me when he left us.
He just had this ability to talk to everybody. That's what made him so good. But I think as far as his legacy goes, and I think we're going to find this out, not just in the last few days and in the coming days, but maybe in the coming years, is probably the impact he's had on a lot of young, up-and-coming African-American journalists. If all of us, when we're done on this time on Earth, if we had the same kind of impact on half the people that Sekou had, then I would say it's a pretty successful life.
Among the many forms of tribute, Sekou's alma mater, Jackson State, has just added a new scholarship. It's called the Sekou Smith Journalism Award. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.